This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It's a Friday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings, live from downtown Las Vegas at our Circa Sportsbook studio. Neither of us are Stormy Bonatoni nor Mike Palm, although Joe Cirallo, I will be playing golf with Stormy's husband today. So that's I guess, the closest thing we can get to there. I'm Ben Wilson.
So you're on six degrees of Kevin Bacon stuff.
Essentially. That's what we're out for. Mike Palm had qualms with both of us today, so he is gone, and Joe Cirallo is here. Great to be with you, man. Last time I saw you in person, it was about 3:37 a.m. at the Luxor Blackjack table. So great to see you again with the sun actually up.
Yeah, great to see you too, Ben. And I want to give you credit where it's due because you set the scene for our audience nicely. But I guess it would be a little braggadocious of you if you mentioned this part, so I'll do it for you. Ben was on the heater of a lifetime at the blackjack table. He was absolutely killing it the last time I saw him. So while it was fun, we got to talk a little bit at the beginning. Once he got locked in, I just, you know, let him breathe, laid off, and let him do his thing because my man was a big winner that night.
That, you know, it's you said once in a lifetime, yes, and it was. I've been chasing that high ever since, Joe. So three months later, maybe we'll find it over the next 2 hours. But we have a good show today. Lot to tackle here as we chase those highs of months past. A lot of good guests as well, which we'll get to here mostly in our second hour of the show. But to kick things off. The first of what? Probably I'm going to set the over-under at 189.5 segments over the next 9 days, Joe, previewing game one of the NBA Finals and the series in general now that it's set because of both series being so brief here with the Celtics sweeping the Pacers. Mavericks do take care of business. They knock off the Timberwolves, the gentlemen sweeping five. Now we wait here. We get the full six-day stretch in between, but opening series price, Celtics over $2 favorites here. Mavericks nearly plus 190 across most shops to win the series. And I guess the way we have to frame it to start just as far as initial take here, Joe, is just how live do you make Dallas in a series like this against the team in Boston who's 76-20 now through their 96 games this season?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the only bet here looking at this series is the Dallas Mavericks, right? Because even though Boston on paper is the better team and they were the one seed, not just in the East, but across the entire NBA this season, and then Dallas comes in, what, a five seed and they make this great run. At the end of the day, these teams are a lot closer than a 1-5 seed would indicate. So I certainly wouldn't advise laying the $2 on Boston. I think the Celtics have a slight advantage in this series. But, you know, Mavericks, whether it's plus 175, if you shop around, you can get them nearly 2-1. I think that's the only play necessarily worth making in terms of a series winner on this NBA Finals. But I got to say, Ben, because you mentioned, first off, I'd hammer that over 189.5 segments. It's painful that we have to wait a week for these two teams to match up. I mean, logistically, I understand to an extent needing some sort of set date. But my goodness, they could move it up 3-4 days. They could have things TBD to see how the conference finals series go. We don't have to have Boston with 10 days off between the Eastern Conference Finals and the NBA Finals. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Seriously, I know. How dare they not think of the bettors who are, you know, day and night betting into this stuff. At least for me personally, I look at the whole narrative, the talking point of the days off and the whole rest versus rest discussion. I find it to be a little bit overblown. Like, I don't put any stock into it. It's the NBA Finals after all, right? Like, motivation, sharpness, practice really shouldn't be a question, but that's just me. There are some people who do view the Celtics' easier path in general in the East versus the West to be an advantage here, the home court to be an advantage, the slight rest to be an advantage. Where do you stand on all that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think there is such a thing as too much rest. And I will say, I think this maybe applies to some sports more than others. I think in baseball, you can absolutely have too much rest. It's a reason we've seen since the new playoff format came into effect that wild cards have been doing better than 1-2 seeds. Basketball, you're looking at a Celtics team that, like you said, they're 76-20. That means they've played nearly 100 games this season. I don't know if they can have too much rest right now. You know that they're running scrimmages, that they're staying warm and staying loose. They need a key guy in Kristaps Porzingis to come back. So the 10 days off certainly helps them in that respect. Because one thing I've been hammering about the Celtics all postseason long, they are not really a deep team. I don't care if 8 or 9 guys get minutes. The Celtics without Porzingis have had 6 guys get meaningful minutes. The only guy coming off their bench who really has any impact on the game is Peyton Pritchard, Xavier Tillman, Sam Hauser, Luke Kornet. Those guys haven't done squat. So I think Boston really needs this to kind of collect themselves because all the attention when it came to injuries and lack of depth this postseason was on the Knicks. The Celtics, really don't have too many more players in their rotation than the Knicks had this postseason. So I think Boston, you really can't have too much rest. Dallas, on the other hand, I think this is kind of the perfect amount of rest. They get a week off, and you know, it's not too much, it's not too little. It's like Goldilocks, right? It's just right. But we'll see how it unfolds. I still, 7 days with no hoops is absolutely brutal.
Sure, I know. I trust me. I feel you wholeheartedly on that. I would say, and as a result of that, and I think the Kristaps Porzingis piece cannot be really overstated because of A, the amount of time he's been out here. And sure, there's some thought that maybe he's been ready to go for a while. Boston felt like they wanted to make sure he was fully 100%, not rush him back. But it's why I would look, you know, betting Dallas early before the series gets underway, to me, Joe, is the way to attack this, whether it is in the, you know, in the derivatives, like the way I'm going to attack it here. I'll bet both the series to go 6 games, the series to go 7 games. To me, that is a better value. Both of those bets each over 2-1, as opposed to laying a $1.50 price on the series over 5.5 games. Essentially, you know, if the series goes 6, if you find a +215 or so out there and you win that bet, you're basically making it a +115 play. If the series goes 7, you're making about +130, and you're having to risk less than, you know, to lay juice on a full unit bet at -150 to go over 5.5. Simply because I see it taking time for Porzingis to fully integrate himself back into the lineup. And we saw what happened, at least when Minnesota's bigs tried to throw themselves at Luka Doncic, and they tried to really rattle his, just his general composure and his, you know, his fluidity within the offense. That didn't work. I mean, Doncic is playing on this otherworldly level right now, and as much as I expect the Celtics to try that at some point, and I see them finding ways to disrupt Doncic as the series goes, and they make some adjustments here when you've got three good defenders in a Jason Tatum, a Jaylen Brown, and a Porzingis. I see it taking some time here for Dallas. We've seen, for Boston, I should say, we've seen how the home court is not necessarily the be-all, end-all of years past. That's why Boston, to me, is a team I'd be looking to target against early. Eventually, I do see them pulling it out in a really tight, grinded-out, deep 6 or 7-game series.
Yeah, and I kind of see things unfolding very similarly to you. I think playing Dallas on a game-to-game basis might be better than just putting all your eggs in one basket for a series future here. I like the 6-7-game approach. Boston's won, what, every series in 5 or less? That's not going to be the case in this one, even though I do lean towards the Celtics. Haven't made up my mind fully yet. I lean towards Boston being the ultimate champions as of now, but it's going to be a battle. And you mentioned having to switch up defenders on Doncic. You know, with Porzingis just coming back, even though they didn't necessarily need him, you look at their path to get here, right? It was the Heat without Jimmy. It was the Cavs without Jared Allen and then Donovan Mitchell for the final 2 games. It was the Pacers without Tyrese Halliburton for the final 2 games. They didn't need Kristaps Porzingis to get past those guys. They might need him to get past Dallas, but at the same time, he might have needed the tune-up against the Cleveland team without Jared Allen to get prepared for this. Because Porzingis, I'm just going to say it, he's not the toughest guy in the world, not the toughest cat on the court. And if you think that he's going to come in and all of a sudden prevent Doncic from entering the paint, yes, he's a good defender because of his length really more than anything, but he's not going to come in there and then all of a sudden assert his dominance over Doncic in the paint. When it comes to physicality, I think Luka would have his way with KP. So it's definitely going to be a defense by committee team effort in this one. But KP needs to get his reps in. They really need to be, if he's out there scrimmaging right now and getting loose with the rest of the team, they need to be working him much harder than a guy like Jason Tatum, for example, who can afford the rest of these 10 days.
Sure.
Because
thing.
KP needs to be ready for game speed by game one.
Yeah, we're breaking down the NBA Finals matchup. It is out after the Dallas 124-103 win over Minnesota last night. I think the way to phrase this overall, Joe, just as we start the conversation, is at least to me, like, sure, Boston has been the number one power-rated team all season in the market. They have the home court advantage. They had the easier, the shorter path. They're more well-rested and healthier. They deserve to be favorites. I'm just not sure that this now, the tax you're paying over $2, is worth it. Admittedly, though, we do have to acknowledge here that this is kind of a Boston team that is perfectly created to slow down what Dallas wants to do. It's why I'm not going to be head over heels saying, all right, let me just load up on Dallas every which way. I look at how Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum can be thrown at as two different guys to control, at least somewhat keep Doncic away from getting his 30, 40 point nights, and you at least force the other surrounding pieces of Dallas. But that's where it goes into the pricing here. And Boston has been so over-aggressively priced, at least in my opinion, all season, despite the great advanced metrics and numbers, that you have to respect Dallas finishing the season post PJ Washington trade is the best defensive team in the league, and just wiping out a Minnesota team in the Western Conference Finals that made the defending champs in Denver look completely inept at times.
Yeah, I absolutely. And this Dallas team, you know, you talk about the way that they can defend Luka and kind of hold him at bay, something Minnesota was just not able to do in those five games. I think something that really plays into their advantage here is their length and the versatility that that provides on defense. Luka had his way against Minnesota from beyond the arc. Now, it's going to be intriguing to see. Obviously, the rest may have something to do with this. Does that carry over into the finals, or is it a completely clean slate? Does he need to shake off a little bit of rust a week from now? Boston's ability to swap guys on him, even though Luka's got that incredible size advantage that almost always poses a mismatch for opponents, Boston's ability to go from Tatum to a guy like Brown, who may not be as tall as Tatum and Doncic, but he's really long and really athletic. It's definitely going to pose some questions, because Luka, I think, has gotten used to at times, not just this year, but throughout his entire career with Dallas. He's gotten used to taking on teams 1 versus 5 at times. You're not going to beat Boston that way. That's for sure. Even if they're a little depleted, if they're a little short man, you're not going to beat them 1-on-5. Now, he's got Kyrie, but it's going to take a real collective effort. Him and Kyrie aren't just going to waltz past the Celtics the way that they waltzed past Minnesota.
Game one line also out as well, opening Boston -5.5. That's out to 6.5 most shops. Total being bet from 212.5 up to 214.5 here as I update the odds screen early over, and Boston money there for game one. Still a lot to discuss on the NBA Finals, but when we come back, we'll dive into the latest news and notes around the National Football League, including some big extensions for some big-name players. We'll do that next as we're just getting started here on the Friday edition of the Lombardi Line.
With Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, if you haven't done so already, check out our new look, VSiN.com, with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. On our front page right now, our guy Johnny Lazarus breaks down best bets for tonight. Big game 5 in the NHL Western Conference Finals, Oilers and Stars. Dallas about $1.30 favorite, with Edmonton set at 5.5. Edmonton, Dallas there on that total. Been an outstanding conference final so far in the NHL. That, along with many other articles, available online right now. We'll talk some more NBA in a little bit. Tom Giles, NBC Boston host, will join us coming up in our next hour. Here in about 60 minutes from now, we'll also talk some NFL with Mark Schofield from USA Today. And that's Joe Serallo we dive into right now, because it is the Lombardi Line. We're an NFL show, and a couple of big-name wide receivers recently have themselves some extensions, and on top of that, now do have some betting full season props out as far as total receiving yards. We'll start in Miami. It's viewed to be kind of an interesting season, and not so much a rebuild, Joe, but just a shifting around when you lose a defensive coordinator as well respected as Vic Fangio. I think a lot of questions about how does Miami try to back up such good regular season performance they had in 2023 into 24, and that certainly starts with giving extension to Jaylen Waddle, who has been so dynamic over the past couple of seasons. Waddle getting a 3-year, $84.75 million extension, $76 million guaranteed, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, and certainly puts him in that category now of these elite game-changing wide receivers, which you have to say when you watch him, Joe, with the health being what it's been, at least to this point, outside of a couple of minor injuries that's cost him, you know, a few games here and there, seems worthy of it on the surface. But it's more like, from the Miami perspective now, how do you compliment him when you are allotting so much of your cap to a guy like Waddle with how many holes are still out there on the rest of the team?
Right. And that's why, Ben, this deal is nuts, because now you can't compliment him. I mean, the Dolphins have completely handcuffed themselves with these contracts, especially with the amount of guaranteed money to guys like, obviously, look, Tyreek Hill, when he's on, he's the best receiver in football. So that deal, I understand a lot more. Jaylen Waddle, no disrespect to him, he could be a number one on several other teams. On the Dolphins, he's their number two. You're locking in 72 mil guaranteed to a number, or in rather your number two wide receiver. 90% of this deal is guaranteed. Now, for the most part, he has stayed relatively healthy, but he still has missed 3 games here, 4 games there. And the guy's 170 pounds soaking wet. That concerns me. Jaylen Waddle has a bit of a fragile body type. And I don't love this deal from a variety of angles, whether it's Waddle's ability to stay healthy throughout the duration of the deal, and the amount of guaranteed money he's getting, or the fact that the Miami Dolphins have a ton of question marks, both on defense and in the trenches on the offensive line. It's like, yeah, it's great. You got your two speed demon wide receivers, but at the same time, what are you going to do with the O-line? What are you going to do with the defense? You're going to need to block. You're going to need to play defense to beat good teams. And what was Miami incapable of doing last year? Beating good teams. They had one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. If you look at their strength of victory, it was among the lowest, if not the lowest. Them and the Dallas Cowboys, their strength of victories were horrendous, both bottom three in the NFL a year ago. Miami's schedule is getting a heck of a lot tougher this year, even just within that division. Aaron Rodgers coming back makes those Jet games a lot tougher. It's not going to be a cakewalk like the first 10 to 12 weeks were a season ago for the Dolphins. I just don't think this was the smartest way to move forward for them when they have so many other holes in already an ultra, ultra competitive AFC.
Sure. It's not like that division has gotten any worse over the offseason. Yeah. And the 1,000 and a half there on the receiving yardage prop, you know, Waddle's gone over that each of the first 2 years for him. I should say the first three seasons for him in the league. But it is telling, though, when you talk about three games missed last year. And I kind of get the sense, like, we say, yes, Waddle has been able to avoid a lot of the major injuries so far, but it kind of seems like he's always like a half step ahead of complete disaster in a lot of ways with the routes he runs and the contact that he tends to just barely avoid, but sometimes can take. And, you know, last year goes barely over 1,000 yards in 14 games. I'm generally one of those guys. You won't see me playing many overs in general on these season-long props. Like, I'm just an unders or pass guy. Probably a pass for me in this category because of that injury, that concern at the very least you mentioned, Joe. But certainly not one I'd want to just be completely fading because of the way, even with the inconsistencies and the lack of solid offensive line play, Miami still found ways to get Waddle the ball. It's just, it might not lead to general team success just by having him put up big stats.
Yeah, to me, I'm with you. When it comes to season props, I lean either under or just stay away. And you look at that, we've got the Dolphins schedule up on our screen. And like I said, it's no cakewalk. You've got some tough games. This is a team that does not perform that well on the road. You've got the injury factor, not just with Waddle in this case, but also with his quarterback, who's fragile as heck. And that's what makes me lean under if I'm playing it. Probably a stay away because, look, if Waddle goes out there and plays 16, 17 games, he's going over, right? There's no doubt about that. But if he plays 12, 13 games, he probably isn't. So it's a stay away for me, but I do lean under just because I don't trust him. And I also don't trust Tua as far as I could throw.
Third most guaranteed money now behind A.J. Brown and Amon-Ra St. Brown there for Waddle with that deal. And I guess we can tie this in here, Joe, because we're about to do a great segment, which I've been looking forward to all week, really, called Judge Joe in our next segment. And I'll kind of start that right now. Better deal, this or the extension that Houston just gives for Nico Collins, which is not quite as much as nearly $85 million, but it is almost $73 million, $52 million guaranteed across three seasons there for Houston and their young wide receiver, Nico Collins, who was scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent after the end of this season. Better deal to you, Joe, Collins or Waddle?
It's Nico Collins, and I don't have to think twice about this. This is an easier verdict than I was expecting to come to. Collins in this deal, look, he was Houston's number one receiver last year. He helped take a team that was drafting second to the playoffs and not only get to the playoffs like the Miami Dolphins did, but actually win a playoff game, something that the Miami Dolphins have shown for about a decade and a half they're incapable of doing. Collins is way more important to Houston's success, in my opinion, than Waddle is to Miami's success. Jalen Waddle can put up the stats and the team can still falter. Collins, I think, has more of an impact on the outcome of Texans games. And now this year, I love that they bring in Stephon Diggs. It's essentially a restructured one-year deal. Collins has a little less attention on him, a little less pressure on him. This guy showed he was capable of being the number one. He is not a selfish prima donna, which I know some people are worried about Stephon Diggs and the way his tenure ended in Buffalo. I think that locker room is really under control. I think D'Amico Ryans, C.J. Stroud, Nico Collins, I think that these guys have great heads on their shoulders, that they're excited to get to work every day with a smile on their face. And I think that this Nico Collins deal is just way better than the Waddle deal. It's also more team friendly, 72% guaranteed as opposed to 90% guaranteed. So from every side, really, whether it's the franchise side or Collins side or the fans, I think this is a great deal for all parties in Houston. I'm all in on this Nico Collins deal. I'm all in on the Texans going into next season.
I think it also helps, too, to that point. You have Stephon Diggs, the final 3 years of that contract when he was brought into Houston, voided. So this is sort of a prove-it sort of season for Diggs, who has become a bit polarizing just with his, you know, the way he has handled things in the locker room, how you have rumors around the league here that he hasn't been the greatest teammate at times. Again, Diggs can shut a lot of people up with that, but it also goes into maybe not just demanding every second or third pass from C.J. Stroud thrown his direction. I think that probably leads into a more diversified approach in the receiving room when you have Diggs, who kind of understands as he gets onto the back nine of my career, hey, I can't be like 07 Randy Moss just demanding every ball thrown my way. So I'm with you on that for Collins. 1,050 and a half on that receiving yards after Collins a season ago. I went off, had a really nice career year, exploding in year three, almost 1,300 yards in 15 games. Again, I'm kind of same camp for me, Joe, as with Waddle. Like, I'm not going to bet that, but wouldn't bet that under, but I certainly would not be shocked here if you see Collins threaten to duplicate what he did and near that 1,100, 1,200 yard mark.
Yeah, I mean, his yards are going to take a hit just because Stephon Diggs is now a part of the team. But Diggs' yards are going to take a hit, too, I think, from what he expected with Minnesota in those latter years or with Buffalo. I think that they're going to have 2,000-yard receivers, and there's nothing wrong with that. C.J. Stroud is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. It's not too early to say that. So, yeah, do I think he could have 2,000-yard, potentially 2,100-yard receivers? I genuinely do. And I think Collins, if anything, I would actually lean over that 1,050 mark for Collins. I really like that more than I like the Waddle mark.
Joe Serallo, the only person who likes the Texans in 2024. I feel like there might be a few others on the bandwagon with you for the explosive nature of Houston. While we're talking about all this, I mentioned how the Jalen Waddle piece with the guaranteed money, it's third behind the, you have A.J. Brown, then Amon Ross St. Brown. The latest report, I'm curious how you think this is going to play out. Brandon Ayuk still looking for his deal, and Jeremy Fowler on ESPN's NFL Live saying the benchmark for his contract extension isn't Amon Ross St. Brown. How do you see this playing out for Ayuk?
I've got so much to say about this in so little time as we near the end of the block here. Brandon Ayuk's not as good as Amon-Ra St. Brown. It's just plain and simple, right? Brandon Ayuk is a beneficiary of Kyle Shanahan's system. And it's not to say that he isn't a talented receiver. He absolutely is. But Amon-Ra St. Brown is the Detroit Lions offense. The run game improved, but St. Brown makes Jared Goff a Pro Bowler in that system. He's a better route runner. He's a better blocker. He's more clutch than Ayuk. Ayuk is the beneficiary of having Christian McCaffrey and having Deebo Samuel. Shanahan's offenses run a lot of trickery. Those two guys deceive a lot of defenses, and Ayuk has a bit of a drop problem and is much more of a one-dimensional deep threat than St. Brown, who is everything you want in a wide receiver.
That's a great shot from Joe. We'll talk more when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with Scorey Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, for a limited time only, we're slashing the price of our annual subscription. It's normally $240. You can now secure your subscription for just $199. Today is the final day that we'll be throwing in an extra 2 months for free. That is 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you get immediate access to our daily best bets, betting splits, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Today is the final day of this 14-month offer, so visit VSiN.com/subscribe. And grab your 14 months of VSiN Pro for just $199 with promo code Lombardi. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. Ben Wilson, Joe Serallo in for Stormy and Mike today on a Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. Give Joe a follow at the Joe Serallo. I'm excited to talk some baseball with you, sir, in a little bit. I've got some college baseball plays. I'm sure you have MLB action. And we will dive back into the NFL in a little bit, revisit some top headlines here, get some more thoughts on the Niners in about a half hour. But right now, segment we've been waiting for all week. It's called Judge Joe. And here we go, Joe.
Let's I'm excited.
I mean, the fact, like, I look at you and I, like, my first impression is not this guy would be sitting in, you know, black robes with a gavel. But, I mean, hey, look, it's your name and it's a J. And there was somebody named Judy who made a great career out of it. Also a guy named Joe who made a great career out of it. So let's do it. I'm going to just throw some, I think just some could be some long shot futures, some general betting thoughts at you. And in kind of deference here to our pal Mike Palm and the segment we do every Friday on the show of Would Palm Have a Qualm? We'll throw it at you, Joe. Do these bets have a case? Or, as our outstanding producer Justin Emery wants me to ask, should they make a plea. This is good. Let's go. NL Cy Young here, and Paul Skeens, the electric righty out of LSU, who has taken the NL Central by storm his first couple of starts. He's down to 60-1 to win the NL Cy Young, even though he's only made a couple of starts so far and was finally promoted here early in the month of May. Any case to make for Skeens to win NL Cy Young, or should bettors here who have any interest make a plea and get out of this thing?
Ben, this is one that I bang my gavel and I say, stop wasting my time in this courtroom on. Absolutely make a plea. This is absurd that Paul Skeens could win the NL Cy Young. A month ago, as of April 19th this season, so 5-6 weeks ago, his longest outing in the minors was a 65-pitch outing. If you want to win the Cy Young, you got to give me a full season of work. And I'm not going to fault him for the Pirates maneuvering his contract, manipulating the contract, and calling him up a little late, but he's going to be shut down early. So when you're called up late and you're shut down early, the kid's a stud. Does he have a Cy Young in his future? Possibly. I would actually say that, you know, if we want to give him a comp to a current guy, a guy like Spencer Strider, I'd say Skeens is more likely to win a Cy Young than Spencer Strider will be. But this year, absolutely not. You got to give me a full season. The NL is stacked. Imanaga, Wheeler, Glasnow, Suarez. Skeens is nowhere near winning a Cy Young.
Great stash too, just like Strider. You can debate who's got.
That's true. Something about the stash and throwing 100.
Something like that. I feel like the 100 part is a little more relevant, but I don't know. Maybe the stash has something to do with that too. I would also say, and Skeens 147.5 is his strikeouts. Like, to me, that's the obvious. That's evenly juiced, -115. If you're able to find a book that offers the under on that, and that's what, you know, the eternal pet peeve we have are books that, For players like a Skeens, they will tax you through the moon, but they also won't let you fade. They won't let you bet no's, and it's yes-only pricing. If you could find a no, like, I would do that 100% because he's not going to throw more than 100 innings, and that would be very aggressive to think of. I think on the Skeens part, what's more interesting, and just the general thought of the rookies within the NL, is the NL Rookie of the Year. We saw Shota Imanaga get crushed yesterday in Milwaukee. He'd given up, what, 5 earned runs combined in his all of his starts to this point. He gave up 7 earned yesterday against Milwaukee. There was already some sense that Imanaga would have to prove himself more because he's not a true rookie. He's been a pro overseas for so many years, now coming over stateside for his first season in Major League Baseball. That, to me, is more interesting. Where do the prices go on Imanaga when you have so many young, other really high-caliber players behind him who have been good but just not great to the point of a 0.52 ERA that Imanaga had before his start yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, look, Imanaga was pitching otherworldly, right? It was bound to happen sooner or later. It cost me a nerf fee on Wednesday when that happened, and it was the first time all year he cost me a nerf fee, so I can live with it. He's still, despite giving up 7 earned in, what, under 5 innings, he still has a sub-2 ERA. That just puts into perspective how great he's been. I'm curious to check the Rookie of the Year odds. Before that that outing, he was like even money. It's not a bet that I would make in May, an even money Rookie of the Year pick. Now, if you get a little more juice, a little more plus money value, I'd consider it because I think that that was an outlier. That's not going to be the norm for Imanaga. So, yeah, someone like him, clear advantage over Skeens in Rookie of the Year, advantage over Skeens in Cy Young, because Skeens just isn't going to pitch enough. It's not a knock on his talent. It's just his workload.
Right now, updated odds hasn't shifted a ton. As you make a really good point on that as well. Imanaga, maybe, I think a lot of bettors maybe were looking for a buy on the dip, but it's +105. Skeens +210. Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Dodgers +650. And then Jared Jones 13-1 on that. As long as we're talking Cy Young here, let's go to a fellow Missouri Tiger alum. Guy I love. I've bet on a bunch this year. It's worked out. Seems like the market now is making you pay on Tanner Houck of the Boston Red Sox, whose AL Cy Young price, as I'm updating my odd screen, down to 11-1, sub-2 ERA. He has been brilliant all season. New pitching coach comes to Boston, has really revolutionized a lot of those starters for the Red Sox. Do you see this continuing, Joe? Is this a case to be made here for Houck at 11-1, or is this the time to maybe sell high with how good Houck has been early in the season?
Yeah, I don't hate him. I like him, but I'm ruling against him on this one. I just don't think he's got Cy Young stuff. Remember, when you're dealing with awards, you're dealing with writers, and you're dealing with their bias and what they see and what they like. And Houck has been consistently really, really good. He doesn't wow me. And he also doesn't have the storyline to go alongside him. So I'll give you a guy with a storyline and a guy who's wowing me. How about at 16-1, we look at Seth Lugo for the American League Cy Young. I mean, this guy is just one of the most fascinating cases in baseball. I know him better than most because I'm a Mets fan, so I've been watching Seth Lugo since 2016 when everyone in our rotation got hurt, he came out of nowhere and he stepped up and helped the Mets get to the playoffs that year. I mean, now he took a, he made a bet on himself, which I love and admire more than anything. Left the Mets to go be a starter with San Diego. Left San Diego to get a contract with Kansas City. The guy has an 8-pitch arsenal, Ben. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. He's got those numerous double-digit strikeout outings on the season. He works out of trouble with, you know, without getting flustered. And you just watch Seth Lugo pitch, and the eye test says something to me. He hit 16-1. That's the value I like in the American League. It's not a knock on Tanner Houck. I just don't think he's moving the needle enough for anyone. Despite the 1.9 ERA, I just think that he's a really good quality start, you know, consistent pitcher. He's just, to me, not the Cy Young winner.
And that's especially why I think looking at a longer shot like you are, Joe, in a season like this AL Cy Young, where, you know, like outside of, you know, Corbin Burns is the second favorite behind Tarik Skubal, but it's a lot of younger, unproven long-term pitchers that you have at the very top of that board. And there's just a lot of question marks of, you know, how long can what Skubal's doing last? He's had a couple of, you know, minor setbacks, but it's still been really, really good. He's your overwhelming favorite right now. You know, outside of like a Luis Castillo, there's not a, you know, and Burns, really, there's not a ton of guys you look at on that board where you go, all right, I've got to beat like a proven 8-9 year starter who's got the goods. That's why I definitely agree with you. I mean, the double-digit prices are where you look at. I think that's kind of why we start this conversation with Houck, since he's the first of the double digits, and go on further. But that, to me, is in a nutshell really what defines this AL Cy Young race, at least for this year, the way it's playing out so far.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, it's definitely not a lock that a guy like Corbin Burns, who was my preseason pick, is going to win it. I think Burns might even have to do a little more because he's, you know, the proven guy. He's not the sexy fun pick, right? He's the expected guy. So Burns might have to, like, right now, if you look at the way he's pitched this season, he's been consistently great, but he's not, kind of like Houck, not wowing you. His strikeout numbers are down. He'll go, you know, six innings, allowed two earned. That's a fine, great outing in 2024. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but it's not sexy. I think if you want the storyline and the price, Seth Lugo, that's a guy you've got a case for.
One more to throw at Judge Joe before we wrap up this segment. The Braves, this keeps going from bad to worse. You lose 3 of 4 at home to the Nationals. Trevor Williams shuts down the Braves yesterday. The offense is nowhere to be found here for Atlanta. Heavy preseason favorite to win the NL East. Finally, Joe, they're 6.5 games back, and finally Philadelphia's favorite. Phillies -120 to win the NL East. They're down to 3-1 to win the NL. Are you in the camp of the Philadelphia Phillies, this being their year in both the NL East and potentially out of the NL?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I lay that $1.20, even though it's May, and, you know, laying anything on a future is something I'd caution against this early in the season. Most teams, once Memorial Day passes, know who they are. I'd say 25 out of 30 teams know their identity by Memorial Day, and the Philadelphia Phillies know their identity. They're the best team in the NL East. The Braves, it's just not their year. They put together these flashy regular seasons year in, year out. They got their rings in 2019. It's just not the year for the Atlanta Braves. Without Acuna at the top of that lineup, they took such a hit. You know, yesterday my play of the day was Nationals first five money line. The Braves have scored 2 runs in the first 5 innings of their last 4 games. It's a flat, deflated lineup. They're calling up no names to pitch. Ray Kerr is getting starts. No, this is all Philadelphia. They're going to be on cruise control. Lay the $1.20. It's a safe bet.
Ray Kerr, he's no Ray King as far as pitchers of yesteryear for the Atlanta Braves and other pitchers around the National League in general. I am with you. It's fascinating to see how much the Braves are struggling on offense right now. We'll talk more baseball later. Up next, some of the top NBA Finals props you can find at DK Sportsbook when we return.
Story Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are so close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN. The crown is yours. Wrapping up hour number one here on a Friday edition of the Lombardi Line with Joe Serallo. I'm Ben Wilson. A rousing rendition for the first time ever in at least our history together, Joe, of Judge Joe. Before we get to the top NBA Finals props that are now getting some action here at DraftKings Sportsbook, there's one other one I want to throw your way that you are you had the gavel out before we even started the segment, and yet we ran out of time to get to it. The Baltimore Orioles to have the most wins in Major League Baseball at 9-1. Whenever I hear somebody this passionate about a bet that's 9-1, I feel like I have to step aside and listen. So what's the case here for Baltimore to finish with the most wins in Major League Baseball?
Oh, it's a hell of a case. I love the Orioles to have the most wins in baseball, and I love the value at 9-1. To me, this, you know, usually when something has value like this, I'd make a pizza bet on it, lay a little sprinkle on it. To me, I'd put a full unit on Baltimore to do this. Because look, as I was explaining to you during the break, when I look at records, I look at one thing, and that's the loss column. Too early in the year to be worried about who's got more wins. What are they doing in the loss column? They're one game behind the Philadelphia Phillies for the best record in baseball. And even though I just went on about how much I love the Philadelphia Phillies to win the NL East, I think the Orioles might be a more complete team. I think they might be the most complete team in baseball. When you look at starting pitching, the way that they weathered the storm without Bradish and John Means early on in the season, you know, it's funny, I came on, I did a guest spot on VEASAN back in February and talked about the Orioles as I gave out a future for them to win the AL East at nearly 3-1. I said all they have to do is weather the storm April and May. Then when Bradish and John Means are in full swing, it's a hell of a rotation. I really love their bullpen. Ironically, the only guy in that pen I don't love is the closer, Craig Kimbrell, but I love the pieces around him, guys like Dylan Tate, guys like Cano in the pen. And then when you look at that lineup, 1-9, I mean, they brought up Jackson Holliday, and they had the luxury of aborting that mission with the number one overall pick because he wasn't doing what their current guys are doing. It's not like they brought him up out of desperation. They brought him up to see if he could handle it. He didn't. And they said, hey, the lineup, frankly, is fine without you. We've got guys like Colton Cowser having, you know, breakout rookie seasons. Gunnar Henderson, the sophomore, is a legit MVP candidate. To me, Adley Rutschman is always an MVP candidate. 1-9, it's a heck of a lineup. The starting pitching is outrageous, and the bullpen is really darn good, too. I think the Orioles are the best team in baseball. And yeah, 9-1, I like them to have the most wins in baseball.
I would not be surprised if Yennier Cano gets some save opportunities sooner rather than later. He had 8 last year, really good campaign. He didn't allow a run for like 3 months to start last year before finally coming back to earth. I'm with you that if you figure out the back end of the bullpen outside of a Craig Kimbrough, who has looked his very elder age a lot of the time this season when he's been out there, yes, a lot of reasons to like Baltimore. That is why they call you the judge, though, Joe.
Yeah, Kimbrel's going to have me. Mind you, Ben, I'm not even 26 years old yet. I'm a few weeks away from my 26th birthday. I'm already on blood pressure meds because of Craig Kimbrell.
He's been known to do that a time or two. You are not the first, even though you might be the youngest who's ever had to do that. But you are not the first. I'll say that. Judge Joe, great segment, especially when we're talking making impassioned cases for 9-1 long shots that you could put a full unit of that bankroll on. We'll see how many of these interesting NBA Finals props as we transition, Joe, at least catch our eye here, because props are out. Menu is only going to grow now as we have the full 6 days in between games with game one of the NBA Finals set for next Thursday here. And you get the Boston Celtics-Dallas Mavericks series. You have some big name players. And as a result, we have some unique props. Let's kind of dive through here, see if these are some of the sort of unique props found at DraftKings Sportsbook. Our producer, Justin Embry, doing a great job diving through here. I wanted to start with the Kristaps Porzingis piece because he's expected to return, be back in time for game one with all the long off days here that we get 10 in total for Boston in between the end of the Eastern Conference Finals and the start of the NBA Finals. Porzingis, it represents a really interesting focal point of this series. If you believe he is going to be back healthy and be the Porzingis we saw in the regular season, odds are you think Boston is going to have not an easy time, but they should, relatively speaking, control the series with a healthy Porzingis in the lineup. His series prop, this is 6.3 rebounds per game he is set at. His series average on the rebounds is a great defensive stalwart, evenly juiced on both sides there. As we start with that one, Joe, what do you make of how to just navigate Porzingis, what to expect from him, given we haven't seen him here in so long?
Well, it's interesting because you look at his average on the season and the guy was good for 7.2 boards per game. So it looks like they're taking into account with this number that these teams, frankly, don't miss a lot of shots. So I think in this series, you're going to see fewer rebounding opportunities. Then you factor in the injury, which is why I wouldn't make a play on this just yet, because I need more information, right? I need to know over the next week how healthy he is, what he's going to be like for game one. You know, is he on a minutes limit? Is he coming off the bench? Is he back in the rotation at full speed? But all that considered, even though I'd wait to make this play for closer, you know, to game one, closer to the series beginning, I lean under because Kristaps Porzingis, I said it before, he's a good defender. He blocks shots. He gives you length. he's not that physical. And I think guys like PJ Washington and the rookie Derek Lively are way more physical. And if he's not 100%, I think those two kids are going to eat him up on the boards. So he may, you know, give you 2.5 blocks per game. He may give you a little finesse scoring around the elbow. He's not, I don't think he's going to be a force on the glass. I lean under the 6.3.
Yeah, it brings up to me the larger point, Joe, of the series, which is you have Dallas finished the regular season, final 15 games, best defensive team in the league, carried that over through the postseason, through all three rounds so far. You get a Boston team that has been among the best defensive teams all year with a perimeter defense that has been designed to shut down a superstar like a Luka Doncic, take him out of his game with two great perimeter defenders in a Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. It leads into now me thinking, I don't know how many of these player prop series overs I'd be looking to bet. I just, as much as game one has seen some early action to the over here, bet up from 212.5 to 214.5, still lower side of the total now that we get into the postseason. And I'm not expecting these to be shootouts in any means. Like, the next prop we have here, Kyrie Irving to make 6 or more threes in any game, which is 3-1. That just seems like a sucker bet to me. As good as Irving has been and as great of a shooter as he has been at times from beyond the arc, like, to me, for Dallas to win the series, Irving will be kind of in that distributor, that do-it-all sort of role that he's been so good at throughout the postseason. I just don't know that I'm going to fall in love with any of these overs outside of maybe the Doncic, you know, on the MVP bets, if you're able to find a nice juicy plus price or some of those sort of leader category bets here for the finals.
Yeah, this Kyrie one, it's a fun one. And you want to think, oh, he wants revenge. He's going to go into Boston and shoot his lights out, right? The best way for Kyrie to get revenge is to embrace his new role. Dallas plays best. You alluded to it. When Kyrie really fully embraces that new role of being a distributor, of being, for maybe the first time in his career, a great teammate. It's a different Kyrie Irving, and I can't believe I'm starting to like the guy. He is becoming an excellent teammate. I thought that the Kyrie Irving-Luka Doncic experiment would blow up in the Mavs' face because I thought these were two ball-dominant point guards, two ball hogs, frankly. And, you know, Luka, yeah, he's still a ball hog. He's the right to be. To me, he should have won the MVP this year. Kyrie has really flipped the script on his narrative. He has embraced a pass-first role. The thing is, when you look at Kyrie, is there potential that one game he'll take 10 or 11 threes? Yes, but more often than not, I think you're going to see he attempts 4 or 5 threes. So if he's attempting 4 or 5, he ain't making 6. And maybe there's that one game he has double-digit attempts. I don't know if 6 go in. To me, at this price, I can't make that bet.
Yeah, so far, each series, Irving's had one game with 10 attempts. Both of those games, he's made 4. So yeah. You're talking about really good efficiency already. A guy who shot about 41% from 3 in the regular season. To ask him to go 6 now, that's a little bit rich. 3-1, I would like a much bigger a payout, at least on that. DK, like there's a lot of great options. The menu is very, very robust. That does not mean it makes sense or is at all a mathematical edge for you to look at making any of these bets. They're more just fun to laugh at. Like, I don't know, what's your fair price on any player to break Wilt Chamberlain's record of 41 rebounds in a playoff game? Is it like 1 million to 1, 10 million to one?
I was just going to say, I'll wager a buck as in a dollar, not a buck as in 100. A buck as in a single dollar to win a mil on that. I mean, no one's coming close to this. You have a better chance at Wilt Chamberlain resurrecting and showing up at the, you know, at the RNC like he did in 1968 than him than having this record be broken. This is absolutely nuts. The one thing I'd maybe make a little sprinkle on is the player to break Steph Curry's record of 34 threes in a series. That I might do a quarter unit sprinkle. Because, you know, I mean, Luka, what was he? He was making 4.5 per game against Minnesota. That all depends on if this goes 7. If this goes 7 and Luka shoots like he did against the Timberwolves, which for the record, I don't think he will because Boston, to me, better perimeter defense than Minnesota. But should Luka do that? Yeah, maybe I'd put a quarter of a unit, a fifth of a unit, like a tiny, tiny bet on this one. It's just the Wilt one is nuts.
A little bit nuts, especially that is 1,000 to 1 is the actual price in that, not 1 million to 1. I love the deep cut, though. I mean, anytime we're mentioning 1968, we've done a good job here on this show. Yeah, you would need Luka to go 5 threes a game, 7 game series. You'd get the record as a result. Even that feels like a bit of a stretch. Just from a volume standpoint there. 1 hour for us in the books here on a Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. We'll revisit some top headlines, break down what the future holds for San Francisco 49ers receivers as we reset next right here on VSiN.